The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
A little more, I mean, if I could give anyone opinion, that would be, I would say there's a lot of great companies out there. I would go with an established one because that's the only variable you can't control is if they're not going to be here.
Right.
So if you go with one that's established, they've already weathered the storm. The first 5 to 10 years is going to be the breaking or making point.
Right.
You know, because it's not just getting started as a business, but as you know, as owners, people change with money. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that guy has great intentions, but he hasn't made $100 million yet.
There's a different kind of business at that level. A lot of these businesses fail because they're good at being a small shop with a guy who's running a business, but he can't be a CEO.
Yep. You're 100% right. And in network marketing, because it's going to geometrically grow, that person's can never run a small shop because the ownership team is always going to have to expand and grow. I mean, even ACN opens new countries, invests in new services. I mean, it's a constant reinvestment for the owner. When I see the ownership and what they're spending, you know, I'm in for $199.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're good.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, they paid more for their flights to go to a new country to open it up than I did to get into the business.
Right. But if they want to keep growing, they got to increase the portfolio and they got to increase their, once you're around the world, you can't go to other planets, at least not yet. So you got to increase as technology changes the offering.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
My name is Patrick Mazur. I've been an entrepreneur for over 20 years and excited about getting an opportunity to share my experience with people just like you.
All right, Patrick. So thanks for coming on the podcast with me from sunny Pittsburgh. Is it nice out there today or it's hot here?
Man, it's been hot all summer. So we're enjoying the weather for sure.
It could be worse. We could be in Houston. I was just on a call to somebody from Houston and I don't know what she's doing on a Zoom call. I think you'd have to evacuate, don't you?
Yeah. In 100 degrees.
Yeah,
evacuate. Yeah,
exactly.
For sure. Texas is hot from top to bottom right now.
Well, it looks like the storm's not going to really hit you guys. I think it's kind of swinging, maybe a little bit, a little rain, but I think it's swinging over towards me as it goes north, but typical summer
is
what it's been. So let's talk about, we're going to get into, you know, all the things you're doing now, but maybe you want to give me some background about, you know, are you from Pittsburgh originally? How you got into all the entrepreneurial stuff you're doing? And then we'll talk about the businesses you're doing now because you do a lot of passive income type of stuff, right?
Absolutely, Mitch. And well, grew up in central Pennsylvania, Altoona. So State College, Penn State, right there was where I was from. And the day I could leave, I did. So immediately, the best view of that town was in my rearview mirror.
Okay.
Just because I was, you know, wanting to do big things and felt I was restricted.
But you're still Pennsylvanian at heart, right? So you stayed in Pittsburgh.
Listen, a Steeler fan, there's some things that never change, you know, growing up in this part of the country. So immediately got a chance to go to college, did the college thing, and afterwards went out to Philadelphia. And that's really what started my whole entrepreneurial endeavor, you know, in school, always looking for things you could do to make money. Got out of school, started a couple businesses out of the gate. Okay. Nothing fancy, you know, cutting the grass, washing cars.
Just hauling ass and making money.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know? It's always good experience, right, when you're young. I did the same thing. I, you know, mowed lawns and shoveled, and we did detailing. It was getting to be big then. I used to sweat all summer detailing people's cars. So
I'd go right to them too. I would go.
Yeah,
right
we
to
would
the
do
consumer.
The same thing. We'd go to their office building and do it in the parking lot, and people would line up. They'd be like, "Oh, can you do my car?"
Yeah,
and I realized it was a marketing technique.
It was unbelievable. And then I would just start just cleaning cars, and then people would come out and be like, "Oh, I didn't say." I was like, "Oh, no, that's okay. Pay me whatever you want."
Right.
So we would just
and they would feel
know,
bad.
Would
they
just,
pay
yeah,
you
that's
anyway.
It. Your car looks beautiful. I can't stand a dirty car. So
right, that's funny. Okay, so then, so that was your early days.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was sort of kicking off. And that, hey, look, that was out of college too. So, you know what I mean? When everybody else is doing the resume and, you know, going on the interview, you know, I was like already starting to go into that entrepreneurial direction.
Because you
like,
just didn't want to be in the corporate world, wasn't it?
I mean, in my
you gotta
father,
be a certain kind of person, you know?
What really triggered it for me was my dad was in the pharmaceutical world.
Okay.
And for 33 years, I mean, company guy, do anything the company asks.
Right.
And then, you know, his 33rd year, they said, hey, we got a couple new guys. We'd love you to train them up. And, you know, my father, absolutely. And it's an honor. And he trained up his replacements.
And they replaced him.
Right. And so.
Company line and they tow you right out the door.
Yeah. And to see that as a young man, seeing your father try to recreate his success, if you will, deep into his 50s, like that sort of said, hey, I'm not going down that road. I'm going to be self-employed. No one's going to fire me. You know, I'm going to always have the opportunity to control my destiny. So that was a motivator in itself. I can remember even my fraternity brothers, hey, can your dad get us in at the pharmaceutical company? I'm thinking, it doesn't end pretty.
You know what I mean? You know, that's not a favor, me getting you in at the pharmaceutical company.
Yeah. You're going to make some money, you're going to lifestyle up, and you know, then they're going to say, hey, we can get some people to do it for less.
Yeah, that's and you have no fallback. You don't, you know, I mean, when you're in sales and marketing and you're an entrepreneur, your industry goes bad, you can do anything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Your skill set's with it. Your contacts are with it. You know, the network you've built, if you will. So, you know, left that, went into home alarms. So got the concept of residual income. Monitoring a home is pennies. You know, so if you understand that, you know, the
this is to do the monitoring, and, not like the installs.
No, we were doing it all. Sell the units, you know, take the customer on and then, you know, package up the monitoring. So if you had enough customers, you know, the residual or the passive income is really in the
monitor. My guy just sold his business to a younger guy. He's got all the residuals. But now in those days, they didn't have all these wireless easy install systems. You needed an installer, right, to wire things.
You did, but that was always somebody else. And, you know, they're pretty easy to find and, you know, package that price in the overall cost.
So you would subcontract that out, basically?
Correct. And that was in Tennessee is when I kicked that off in the Nashville area. Did well. What started to happen is the banks are starting to get a little more tight on lending money, and people that need alarm systems generally don't live in the nicest neighborhoods, and you know, sort of saw that to be a little bit of a challenge. So took what I had, sold it, made a little bit of money, nothing to write home about. And in the process, I had a big motorhome, a 40-foot motorhome.
Oh, right? Big RV.
Big one. And I went to Atlanta in 1995. And they were talking about the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding a gentleman that was big in the apparel world. And he said, man, we'd love to take that motorhome of yours and follow the Olympic torch run. So I said, well, how would that work? And next thing you know, I'm 980 cities and 28,000 miles.
You went with it? You didn't rent out your RV?
I said, listen, I'll come with you. Let's do this together. I can, you know, put some people together. I think that's probably what we need. And we figured it out along the way.
Was this to create like a video? I mean, like
We were selling t-shirts and bumper stickers.
So you were following them around selling merchandise, basically.
Yes, for merchandise. And the torch never stopped. So
he had the licensing rights to do that?
So all the licensing material, Coca-Cola was a sponsor. So right, it was, a Coca-Cola shirt and, the whole torch run. So one specific shirt that they had that was real good for the torch run. So that was quite an endeavor, as you can
imagine. That was the Olympics where that bomb went off, right?
That's correct.
Day
9 bomb. Yep. Yeah. There was. So did that. While I was on the run, I met some guys that were like, are you going to do political campaigns? How does that work? Oh, yeah, they're even better. Oh,
right,
really?
Of course. Well,
because you don't have to get licensed because they're political people.
Right.
So it was, you can use their face and their picture.
Yeah, it just supports their campaign.
For sure. So did the Democratic and Republican Dole Kemp and Clinton was the, second term. And did that, which was, again, I did 42 states twice in the same year.
So it was the same thing. You would follow them around to where they're making appearances and then sell merchandise?
Correct.
Wow.
It was very, very exciting because people didn't buy going in. They bought after they heard the speech.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they sort of go in and
rah, excited.
Bill Clinton is a phenomenal speaker.
Yeah, he is. He's a great speaker.
It was Poe unions up, north and unions down south. And it was,
And then they're all pumped up. They all want to buy shirts and hats and whatever, right?
Absolutely. And the Republicans, not so much. No. You know what I mean? They're more lapel pin, something a little classier, if you will.
That's funny.
But the Democrats, for sure, that was a lot of fun.
What did you do? You had like a guy who's making them, shipping them to you in different parts of the country?
That's exactly right. So I would find the merchandise I liked that I could see could sell well. And then I would just contact whoever's making the button or whoever that was and say, good, I'll take 10,000. And, here's where I'll be, and FedEx them to me or UPS. And
right, because you had to have the goods there.
Yeah. And here's the problem. Finding out where the president's going to be is very difficult.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a secret.
Right, yeah. So they don't like to give you the whole tour schedule, right? And he's
that
in a jet.
That didn't work out, I think, in Dallas in 1963. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
They published that one. That was the last time they did that.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, come see the president.
It's not funny, but I had a friend work for the Secret Service. He said the only person in the government that can't override the Secret Service is the president.
Right.
The vice president wants to be stupid and end up dead. That's his choice, but we're not the president. So,
yeah.
So how did you, obviously.
So I would call the White House every day and call the press corps and where's the president going to be? And, they would tell you two days out.
Oh, that
day
much?
Out.
2 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Two or one day. And, and the problem is he is in a jet and, you don't have a jet. And so I was, catching the ones that I could. And, if you're on the West Coast and I had to drive.
He's going to Hawaii.
Coast,
you're not going to get there. Yeah.
Or he would do Portland, Oregon and Portland, Maine the next day.
You're kidding.
So it was like, they were just, I would never be able to catch them all.
Just
so
because of the way the schedule worked, right? Yeah, like Portland, Maine was ready for him. So he got on a plane and he went over there.
Yeah. So a lot of fun. And really was funny. At one time I see the same Secret Service because there's details that just go with the president. So if you go to, 30 or 40 or 50 rallies, you start seeing the same people, right?
Yeah.
Especially. So I ended up talking to one guy and they said, hey, I'm just selling t-shirts and buttons and all the rest. He's like, oh, we know what you're doing.
Oh yeah. They know everything.
Yeah. That's what he said. He goes, well, remember how that news station was talking to you that day? Well, that wasn't a news station.
Really?
They're
not going to let you near that place without knowing everything about you.
Yeah. Who is this kid?
They probably know what you had. We know what you ate for lunch yesterday.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So
that's their job.
So do you remember, this was 96, 97.
Okay.
Green Bay won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So this is,
that was Brett Favre, right?
Yeah. That was back in the day. So I was in the merchandising business and I had pennants. So I'd go and those pennants that people would put on their walls. So I went to the manufacturer the night of the Super Bowl because I was close to Green Bay.
Right.
And I said, if they win, I'll just take 5,000 pennants.
Because they had the licensing to print them?
They had the NFL license, correct. And there's certain, manufacturers throughout the country. So I sat at the actual manufacturer, watched the Super Bowl. They won. I took literally 5,000 pennants before, Dick's Sporting Goods, before Modell.
Right, they went around.
Before, I'm...
So you were waiting there. Whoever won, you were going to take their pennant.
Yeah, no matter what. So drove up to Green Bay. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning and there's a
Where were you getting The merchandise.
Winona, Minnesota. So it was in Winona, Minnesota.
Oh, it's not that
Minnesota.
Far. So it wasn't like you were down in Tennessee.
That's why I was actually there thinking if it did work out into my favor, then I could grab it and make it because the second question, you have to get there before the parade. Because when the parade comes, that's the following day and, you know, the whole nine yards. So it got there at 4 o'clock in the morning, a traffic jam, sold out before the parade started. Literally everything I had gone.
Because everybody wanted, right.
Because it was the real stuff and it was Super Bowl champ and it was, you know, it was.
And those guys, you know, that's the only team in the NFL that's owned by the public, that's publicly owned.
Very prideful.
So they're all like.
Very prideful.
Die, yeah. You're a real hustler in those days.
Man, listen, I did NFL, NBA, NHL. Once I understood it, I would go to the manufacturer.
Why not, right?
And go to every city and just pray cities that never won before, like Utah, you know,
right,
San Antonio.
Right, because they're going to buy everything.
Detroit sweeps with the Stanley Cup
like New York,
in 1997.
They're going to buy all their shit. Yeah.
Yes.
And this was all in your RV?
Yeah, well, I actually couldn't do it all in the RV because when those certain teams won, San Antonio and others, I had to fly. I had
just
to
couldn't
put it
get
all,
there fast
get
enough.
Get a ticket. Yeah, get to the city. And I was selling at the airport. I mean, flying in that day, I'd rip the thing over there. It was like feeding fish. How much? You know, give one.
How would
the
they
police
pay
officer.
You in those days? You didn't have like
everything
a cell phone
cash.
With a swipe
everything
card.
Everything was cash.
People had cash in those days. Yeah.
Yeah, it was cash. It was all cash.
Right.
So that a lot of fun, you know. But look, what it made me realize was I wasn't going to become financially free. And I was making money. And that's really where the shift started to come to look at passive income, scaling. What else can I do? Because I study people that do the same thing I do. And I'm looking at guys that, hey, you know, that the NFL, NBA, NHL one, I used to always think, why isn't other people doing it? Like that to me.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. So you can make money, but you're hustling. You're on the road all the time. You're not making a fortune. You're chasing the next wave.
That's it.
Yeah, sure. It's understandable.
And so that's what I fell into network marketing. You know, so direct sales.
Right.
So I got a presentation and I was like, I like this. I can't do it right now. Give me every audio you have. Right. So I took all their cassettes. I was driving around.
What was the first network marketing?
It was
partner?
The same company that I still work at today. Oh. It's called ACN.
Okay.
And it was phone service through network marketing, direct sales. So I'm thinking to myself, this is a neat idea. Give the service away. Everybody's got to use it, but I'm not ready to do it now. So Mitch, I took all of the audios and listened to them as I drove around the country, preparing for when I'm ready to do this. Like I'm thinking, okay, I need to learn how they're doing it and get ready to do it. And then I just said, okay, great. I'm stopping this and I'm jumping into the direct sales industry. And that's what I did.
And what did they do in those days? There wasn't any voice over IP, right?
No, we did local long distance.
Okay.
So local phone service, long distance phone service, dial-up internet. That was our big launch.
And yeah, and then DSL came, right?
Pagers.
Oh yeah, pagers were still big. Blackberries weren't even out yet at that point, right?
No, cell phones were just coming, but they were super expensive.
Right. And you could open a store. You could have like your own cell phone store. It wasn't like Verizon you compete with. Yeah.
And so that's how I jumped into the direct sales.
Yeah, in those days, people don't know. You used to pay for a long distance service.
Oh,
and it was
Dial one, get paid. I mean, if you're a millennial right now, they have no idea there was a yellow phone on everyone's wall that we leased, that we rented that plastic, $5 a month. The phone probably cost $3 and we rented it for $5 a month.
Yeah, I was in the city once and my kids go, what is that? I go, well, that's a phone booth. Yeah. It's not really a booth anymore. It's just like a standing thing. They go, where's the phone? There was just a wire hanging out there. Well, I don't know phones anymore.
So, you know, that's really where I started to dive into that next level business, if you will. And, you know, getting the mentorship and getting affected by people that were successful and that were willing to show you what they were doing. See, the problem in business, internet's really flattened that, I think, now. I think information's so available.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's very fungible. Yeah.
Back then, you know what I mean? To learn things and, you bought books, you had to get audios, you had to go to events. You know, there was, you know, all that stuff was held very tightly.
Yeah, to get somebody to take you under their wing type of thing.
100%. Yeah, 100%. So, you know, fortunate enough for me, I found a great company that, you know, continued to evolve and I evolved right with them. And, you know, over the years, success came alongside of the hard work. And the beautiful part about what I do from that perspective was anybody could do it. You know what I mean? It wasn't.
There weren't barriers to entry. Really? Yeah,
as we talk about other opportunities and things that I do today that are exciting, but they're capital intensive. And,
yeah.
you know, I think that's really a challenge for a lot of people, especially
new entrepreneurs, right? Yeah.
And you know, when you got one foot on you know, with a paycheck coming from a career or a job, and you're trying to go out and start this business, the last thing you want is a lot of stress over capital.
Right.
Just because, you know, it really ruins both at the same time in a lot of cases.
And it increases your risk too. Oh,
big time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that's really, you know.
And the company's network marketing and affiliate marketing, like you get paid on the service and you get paid for people that you bring into the business.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And what they do is they have electricity now, high speed internet now.
Yeah,
so as technology changed, they just said, we'll go get you customers.
Expanded their portfolio. Yeah,
absolutely. And because we're not married to technology, you know, watch the companies like MCI, others that, you know, when I started, these were the names in the industry that, you know, aren't even around anymore. And, you know, ACN just continued to grow and continue to bring on new services and eventually went into other countries. And then when they went into other countries, that just opened up more people to become customers. And so, you know, the customer base just continues to grow and you get a piece of the bills. And even to today, I have dial-up internet customers that I still make money on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know. I met a guy who sells dial-up internet like in the Midwest. They don't have the high-speed stuff that we do in the
business. Isn't it neat? Yes.
You know how long must it take for today's websites to load on a dial-up connection? It must take a day.
I'd move.
I mean, do you remember when the internet first started, you'd find like a picture? You'd sit there, it would load each line, right? So now it must take like hours for a basic website to come
up.
Yeah. They don't know anybody. They, you know, I don't know.
Or know another opportunities. You know, that's just it. You know, to your point, you know, some of these areas, that's it. So satellites helped out a little bit in those parts
a little bit.
As well.
But basically the big companies have no incentive to run high speed out there. They don't make enough money.
That's right. That's right. Customer costs too much. You know,
I mean, that's why the government was getting involved and saying, listen, let's force them to do it. But then they changed that, I think. Net neutrality got thrown out the window. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that would be in your wheelhouse. So that really allowed for me to do a couple of things. One, build a big network of people. You know, all my great ideas came from other people, associations, you know. Second thing is, you know, you become a better person, you know, as to your point about a, you know, somebody who's in marketing or sales, you know, you got to really become a great human being, great listener, great question asker. I mean, just, you know, you're right on point with what you do. I mean, this is truly, you know, for anyone that's looking to go to the next level, those skill sets you need to have, and
sure.
you can actively go get them, or, you know, experience is going to give them to you, one or the other.
Right.
And so that then allowed me to open up other opportunities over the years and, you know, things that I work on today, still funded by what I make at ACN. So, you know, that income has allowed for me to start to do other things that are capital intensive in every case. I was going to say in a lot
but
of cases.
But now you have the money, you can do the investments.
And not so concerned about making them work right away. I think a lot of times as business owners, money's the last thing to show up. So it's like, you know, when you start a business, I just tell you, look, just remember, the problems are going to show up. The investments are going to show up.
The bills.
Everything is going to be money. That, if you're asking about the money, you want to rethink the business because it's going to take a minute for that part to come together. For sure.
So when you got involved, and this is a good lesson for people that are looking to get involved in network marketing, and there's thousands of companies out there, some good, bad, some indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say, like, you know, if somebody gets started with it, how long do they got to give it to kind of, you know, it's a long haul, right? I mean, you got to stay involved.
It's
can't give up after 3 months.
You know, in the benefit of network marketing is anyone can do it. So it's just like the public library.
Right.
Anybody can go, anybody can read, anything you ever wanted to know is all available at the public library and it's absolutely free.
Right.
Okay, great. So because it's free, you also have, you know, we don't need to go or we're not going to spend any time there because it didn't cost anything. So network marketing is a tremendous business, but it is a business. And I worked it as I did other things prior to this as hard, if not harder.
Right.
To get a level of success that I wanted to achieve. And that meant, look, if you were getting married, I wasn't coming. If you were going to bachelor party, I wasn't coming. Family reunion, I wasn't coming.
Working.
I wasn't coming. Like, right. Period, done, over and out. I wasn't coming. I didn't care. Best friend. And, you know, there was big sacrifices for that, you know, and I think a lot of people aren't prepared to do those things, you know, because it's like, oh, I don't have to go. I can go to my cousin's wedding. I can go to a bachelor party. But there's a cost that you're, right. You know, with that. So I religiously, you know, showed up every day for multiple years before I saw really any big returns.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you know, it's like anything, right? If you do it slowly, you're never really going to take off. If you work real hard, you take off. Then eventually you get to cruising altitude and you reap the rewards of your hard work. I hear a lot of people, oh, I tried that, didn't work. I go, well, it works for somebody.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Yeah.
And it's probably for the people that put time in and built their networks and got to know people and put the time in and kept growing. And, you know, we're real business people about it.
You know, it's relationship driven and you've got to create relationships and they take time and you've got to go out and, you know, network and do the things that you would do no matter, look, you're in the law business. You know, we have got accountants that are watching here. We got insurance people. What business doesn't do those things? They right. all do it. So I just money. Think that, yeah, I just think the difference is, to your point, is because people spend a lot of money to get into a business. Hey, I bought a farmer's insurance and I dropped whatever right. that number is. The gun's to my head. No yeah, one has so to tell more, me to go right. it, go do it. So back to the public library, you know, kids in at Harvard pay a lot more money. And the more you pay attention.
Right.
So my good feeling point. Is, you know.
But if people put the same amount of time and effort into the lower entry, you know, yes. cost things, it doesn't have to be network marketing.
That's right.
They would get good rewards too. They just got to take it kind of seriously.
And I think sometimes the lack of investment takes that seriousness away. You know what I mean?
Whereas yeah, because a lot of the people get involved, they don't do a lot of it always floats up to the top 20% or 10% yep. or whatever, yep. right?
And I hear, you know, the guy at the top makes all the money. Well, that's in every business. You know, right. to be every industry. Yeah, the LeBron, if you look at what he gets paid
right.
compared to everybody else in the NBA, you know what I mean? There's a big difference, you know? And is he at the top? Well, yeah, he is probably one of the best ones on the floor right now. So
right.
same in our industry, you know, the top people always make a lot of money because they're
well, it also people. Has to do with the size of the sales force. So if you're coming True. In, you can build your own group under you, but if it's a well-known product, there's obviously going to be more competition.
For sure.
That people have it than, you know, if something that's newer. So obviously that, you know, you get in earlier into any company, you can potentially from time, you know, do better, but there's also more risk with a newer company, right? So go out of business.
First one through the gates, the bloodiest, you know, I'm always, yeah. I don't want to be the pioneer. I liked America when they had running water and electricity.
Yeah, right. I don't want to be the guy who goes hooking up the water. What is this? You know, like, you know, got to go to the outhouse. And then somebody yeah. says, well, you know, we got running water in the house. You're like, you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that type yeah. of stuff. Yeah. I think, yeah.
I like a little more. I mean, if I could give anyone opinion, that would be, I would say there's a lot of great companies out there. I would go with an established one. because that's the only variable you can't control is if they're not going to be here.
Right.
So if you go with one that's established, they've already weathered the storm. The first 5 to 10 years is going to be the breaking or making point.
Right.
You know, because it's not just getting started as a business, but as you know, as owners, people change with money. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that guy has great intentions, but he hasn't made $100 million yet.
And there's a different kind of business at that level. A lot of these businesses fail because they're good at being a small shop with a guy who's running the business, but he can't be a CEO.
Yep. You're 100% right. And in network marketing, because it's going to geometrically grow, that person can never run a small shop because the ownership team is always going to have to expand and grow. I mean, even ACN opens new countries, invests in new services. I mean, it's a constant reinvestment for the owner. When I see the ownership and what they're spending, you know, I'm in for $199.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're good.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, they paid more for their flights to go to a new country to open it up than I did to get into the business.
Right. But if they want to keep growing, they got to increase the portfolio and they got to increase their, you know, once you're around the world, you can't go to other planets, at least not yet. So you got to increase as technology changes the offering as you saturate the marketplace. Yeah. Now, are you involved in other businesses?
I am. One thing that I found in ACN direct sales, if you will, just get a great partner. So I find people that are passionate about something, you know, that I know that they're on their way to do something great because I can see it coming a mile away. And how do I help you? And what I find, not only financially help, but also masterminding help. Because you've been there and done it so many times, sometimes you just have to, keep.
So you're talking like businesses where you mentor them and maybe invest capital in the business as more of a silent partner.
Yes.
And grow your portfolio that way.
Yes. Yes.
So can you tell me about some of the interesting businesses?
Sure. And because having capital, know what I mean? That's the other side of it all. So, you know, one thing that we're in COVID, it's been a little difficult, but Indian food is a very uptrending thing right now in the US. You know, it's the only thing never been franchised. If you look at Indian food, I mean, I'm talking McDonald's franchise or Five Guys.
I mean, there's Greek now you're starting to see. Obviously, Mexican's big. Yeah. Pizza's so even Blaze. Yeah.
It's you know, now again, we're struggling as everybody in the restaurant business is, and selling franchises probably won't happen till post COVID, just because I don't think anybody right now would run into a restaurant business, super, super expensive to get into, as you know, build outs are hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, there's no, 10, 15 year leases and things that I think right now we got to sort of weather the storm. But I feel that if you're still here after the storm, there's a big opportunity. Forrest Gump, when he was out in the shrimp, and the big storm came in.
Right, and he survived.
He was the only shrimp left.
There was a bunch of restaurants being built in my town. I think Bear Bar is a franchise and things. Yeah. Bear Burger, and a couple other things. And they're dormant now. I mean, they're silent. Yeah. They never opened. I don't know if they will open or whatever. But if they were able to, But right now, you can't go indoors. I don't know about you, but you can't do that here.
Absolutely. So, we're doing delivery. We're doing that thing. We're getting our brand out there.
A couple of locations at this point?
Right now we've got one in Allen, Texas, which is the suburbs of Dallas. It's making money. Nothing.
So that's like the test site made.
Exactly. So how we build it, you build one, you bring that's the test kitchen. That's the one that everybody comes through to get trained. That's where you can see the whole concept. Here's how, the customer experience feels, and here's the numbers we've been able to do. And so you need one to actually, be able to sell multiple ones. So that's really where we got things kicked off at. And
so it wasn't like this guy had an Indian restaurant and you met him and you said, maybe we should franchise. This is like you're building a community and this is a model home.
Yeah. Okay. That's exactly it. It's seeing things before they happen is what I predict.
Well, like that's this, what in, you always want to do, right?
The food industry, most people open 3 or 4 restaurants, then they want to franchise.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the beautiful thing. If you go into the business as I'm ready to franchise, meaning so then you're building it with the menu,
right? With that intent.
The manuals.
Some restaurants are hard to franchise without a lot of changes.
That's exactly it. How to greet the customer. All that stuff documented. You know what I mean? Where to buy the chairs, how many chairs to buy, how much of this, how much everything you're going to need laid out and ready to go. So the beautiful part is that's the whole intent to your point, when we started it, is great. This is a franchise, and why we think the Indian space is big because of just the natural need for this particular, you know, cuisine.
Even well, second generation community now in the United States, it's growing. Yeah. And you're right; it's not around. Any Indian restaurants are privately owned. They're not.
That's right. That's it. And so if you didn't grow up in India, but your parents did, you have the naan bread, you know, the buttered chicken, you know, so you're already familiar with the food because your parents are cooking it. There's nowhere to get it out outside of a handful of places and nothing standardized.
Yeah.
So, you know, the benefit of
now, Allen, Texas is not in the wake of the hurricane, is it?
No, it's outside of Dallas. So you're 6 or 7 hours north. Yeah, they're fine. So, yeah, right.
Yeah.
The other thing is in the photography space, we started a studio where photographers can come and bring their clients and use different sets to shoot different photos. And we're doing this also in Dallas, and very exciting stuff right now because
different partners.
Different partners. Yeah.
Okay.
The interesting thing with this particular endeavor is there used to be the old studios, you know, you and I growing up, your family portraits, all that thing, you made an appointment. There was
a guy in my town.
Yeah.
Dave Rossi Photography. He's still around, but he's not there anymore. It's too expensive and whatever.
Yeah. And so again, now everybody has a cell phone. So now they can take a picture. And so now you're eliminating a lot of that need for a big studio for these guys. But, you know,
right.
People still get married and people still have kids and people still have, you know, wedding anniversary pictures. So we built it, multiple rooms. There's 6 studios in one building.
Okay.
Come in, you can use any one you want. You pay by the hour and it's yours. So what we're finding is because of even with COVID, it's trending up the other way. It's going really well because everybody's got to get a better Instagram picture. They got to get a better Facebook.
Yeah,
they got to get their website up and running. If they have they have to come in and take food pictures of their menus and things that, you know what I mean? Now that everybody's going digital and everybody's online, it was really just made it grow very, very quickly. For people that said, hey, I got to look better online. You know, I really don't have.
They hire the photographer. The photographer doesn't need to pay full-time studio space.
Yes, yes.
How long has that been business?
So we've been up and running for about a year.
Okay.
Things have gone really well. We're actually looking at our second location. We're going to go to Austin, you know, so we're looking at the Austin, Texas. That's really growing area. And then as we get going, we're going to move up north because I think this would.
But that's a chain. That's a corporate chain concept.
Yep,
that's
what we want to do. No, we want to, you know, own it all, package it up, and then, you know, be able to make some decisions down the road. But the beautiful part about it is don't need the best locations. You know, some of the things that are expensive, you know, today because
you need a warehouse, basically.
That's it. You know, standardized.
Shutterfly could buy something like that from you or whatever.
Yeah.
People do their own pictures. They can go. They don't have to be professionals, right?
Yeah.
If you want to go in and take some pictures with your camera.
With all the right lighting, with all the right backdrops.
Give them a tripod,
you know,
up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything that they need. And to your point, a lot of people are amateurs, meaning we have probably 20% professionals. 80% is just, you know, average every day that are coming in to shoot some pictures. And and because of social media, they're putting it out. They're tagging us. People are, you know what I mean? So now you get this whole cross pollination.
Yeah,
my buddy was here. I saw his picture. And we're even looking at how do we go later hours? You know what I mean? Like right now we're 9 to 11, you know, people, you know, and then maybe reduce the cost of later in the evening. Hey, if you want to come at midnight and get some photos, you pay half of what
these
you
are
would
people coming after work, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, got it. You got, you know, all, everything is automated. We got your credit card. Come on in, cameras everywhere. Here's the code. Go use the stuff. I mean, eventually we like to get to that point where we don't even need to physically be there. Outside of somebody that comes in probably twice a day and cleans up, just wipes things down and makes sure everything is
spray,
you know, the way we want it. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, inquiring minds want to know. So you're in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You never mentioned that you lived in Texas. You lived in Nashville.
Yeah.
How'd you hook up with the Indian guy and how'd you hook up with the photography guy?
Yeah. So networking, same thing, you know, building teams. Like, you know, I was in real estate heavy at one point because of people that I met ACN.
Like,
you know, people,
renovations, flips, things like that?
And buy and holds. And we were flipping apartments at one point, you know what I mean? Just, you know, forced appreciation, get the rent roll up and then sell the building. And again, so all of those things came through my network marketing business, just because that's where I meet people. And as I meet them, just like you, I meet you, Mitch, and their passion is, hey, I'm doing ACN to generate money for X. okay, great. Tell me about X. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
There was a method to their madness.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, look, what do you do? Money's a tool.
Right.
You know, what are you going to do with all your money? You just want to roll around in it? No, I want to take my money and I want to do this. Interesting. Tell me more about this. And you get to observe who they are when you work with them.
Right.
You know, so it's a great opportunity also, because as a partnership, as you know, being an attorney, usually don't end well. You know what I mean? I try to talk people out of partnerships. When people go, hey, I want to be a part of my best friend. Like, you and your best friend, you know, want to stay best friends?
It's
hard. Probably don't want to, you probably don't want to be partners.
Or document the shit out of that thing, you know?
Oh, you got to paper it all.
Yeah.
And not even.
Because that's the biggest problem with friends. You shake hands, you love each other, you this, you that. And
then the emotions get involved.
You misunderstand each other. And maybe you both feel, you know, you both mean well, but you remember it this way, he remembers it this way. Yes. Boom. It's not good.
Partnerships give you the ability to blame.
Yeah.
And so, you know, solo entrepreneur, you have no one to blame but the mirror. So it's, you know, that never even occurs to you that I should be upset because it's all up to you. Whereas partnership, but again, over the years, I've been able to become better with people and give them a little more latitude and go to where they are and also be a little more upfront with them, to your point in the beginning of, I like Shark Tank when they ask, how much money do you have in and, you know, what are you willing to do? You know, because I think that's the questions that every investor wants to hear.
Like, because at that point, you're investing in the person. You're not investing in the concept.
That's
because
right.
There's a lot of good concepts. Execution's terrible. They don't ever go anywhere.
That's why people go, I need you to sign an NDA. I'm like, listen, the ideas are a dime a dozen. It's to your point, is implementation.
Yeah.
So, but my whole strategy is passive income, royalties. How do I get that, you know, ongoing customer, you know, a repeat, buy a membership at the photography studio, create your membership.
Yeah. Recurring income is a good model.
Everything that I can make an ongoing, buy 10 franchises, we get 5% of whatever you sell. There's so many ideas that I'm always looking for that. How do I continue to make money when I'm sleeping? Because at the end, you know, that's really going to be the way to create long-term wealth.
Right. Well, it's hard to make money anyway, so you might as well do it the easier way, you know, the better way, the more recurring way, than just have to do it, redo. I mean, look, a lot of my legal practice, I have retainers and stuff like that, but a lot of it is they call me when they need me. It's not recurring income, not yet, not at this point, you know. So, look, that's why people are attracted to real estate. It's not for everybody, but it's, you know, you have tenants and they pay rent and it recurs and, you know.
And I think the best is the triple net lease. I mean, if you really my experience in real estate is, you know, what I didn't appreciate is everybody doesn't pay and you're, you know, and they treat your place like a rental car. And I used to ask people, hey, how do you treat rental cars? Oh, I treat them horribly. Well, that's how they're going to treat your property. So, you know, get ready for them to come.
That's a good
analogy. You know, it ain't mine. So I found when it isn't mine, it's always like.
I know a guy used to buy post offices. Like they were these towns that would be looking to raise money. They would be auctioning off their post office and you buy the post office. It was all triple net. You'd nothing but a check. Now, of course, I don't know if that's such a good investment anymore.
Yes.
Post office is going to go out of business. But, you know.
Rite Aid. You know what I mean?
Right. Those they do 20-year lease backs and stuff.
That's exactly it. So that's, again, you know, that's how to grow your money. Great. Make your money and then figure out how to grow it. But to our point is really be, you know, mindful of exactly how that's going to look 3, 6, 9, 12 years down the road. And then also, you know, what it's going to take to get to that 12-year mark, because the first 5 years are the hardest and, you know, most people can't weather that storm. And some of it's not only financially, it's emotionally. You know, sometimes you get to that point where it's never going to work. And then you just, you know, manifest that conversation into, you're right, it's not going to work. You know,
right. So. Yeah. You talk yourself out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people sometimes don't give things enough chance. And I think they also, and I was talking to a guy yesterday who, was it yesterday, 2 days ago, who's, he's a young kid, but he's involved with flipping houses and stuff. I met him through another guy who's in a real estate system and they did a 7-day flip. They actually did. They ended up doing 2 duplexes in 7 days. They did 4 units, 7-day flip from contract to not to keys, but to from contract to being listed for sale. Right.
Yeah.
So, and he said, and it was a good point that, you know, a lot of people get involved in things and they just, they feel like they fail. And then they're like, well, it didn't work. You know, he said our first deal we did, we borrowed money from somebody, we flipped the house. It was a disaster. think we barely got him his money. We didn't get his money. We lost money, and then we paid him back over the years. Yeah. We learned a lot.
Yeah.
But we weren't like, oh, we're never going to do this again.
Yeah.
It took him a while to get it right. Now he's making a lot of money. But I think people just give up. They first of all, especially in network marketing, you don't need a business plan, right? You just go, you sign up, you do it. But you really do. You need a strategic plan. You got to have a plan of way to do it. How you're going to do it. Just like anything. And then if you stick to your plan and you see it through and you say, listen, I know this is going to be hard for 6 to 8 months.
Right.
I shouldn't expect to make money for 10 months to 12 months. If I make it before, it's gravy, right?
Yeah, don't then tell anybody.
You would have, and you'd have different expectations, right? You would manage your own expectations. If you don't expect it, then you're just happy if it happens. And I think probably your attitude was a good one.
I think you're, to your point, you got to manage expectations. And I think as people in real estate, a great, great analogy. I mean, every time I meet a contractor, I'm always like, the first deal you did, you did for free, didn't you? 100% of the time, like the first time you bid that job was free, wasn't it?
Right.
You know, by the time you figured out what, because you didn't know any of the, you know, you had nothing to compare it to. And so to your point, look at that as experience, and that you need experience, and that's what they're going to pay you for down the road, is that experience and that, you know, that knowledge going into it of what things are going to cost and what you're going to make, and, you know, be able to have that understanding. And, you know, you will make money. It just takes time and takes experience.
Yeah, I interviewed a guy recently who was looking to raise money through angels and VCs and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he went to all these pitch contests, and he figured the first 10 of them, I'm not only going to lose, but I'm just going to screw this up as best as I can. And I'm going to learn and grow. And he raised more than $1 million on a crowdfunding site after that.
Wow.
And, and you know, it was the attitude of I'm learning, I'm not failing.
That's right. John Maxwell has Failing Forward, a great book. It's all about that attitude of the experience, you know, hey, look, I have to, you know, go through this in order to be, I tell people, you're going to be bad before you're good. Why does everybody at their last hours of life say, I should have did this and I should have done that? Because fear has left them.
Yep.
You know, there's no more fear. And fear is fear of being awkward because it's going to happen. I think to your friend's point, hey, I'm going to go pitch it 10 times. But by the 10th time, your language is good. Your experience, you got, you know, you know what to say, what engages, what doesn't work.
But also the people that are telling you, Patrick, what are you doing that for? A network marketing? You're selling phone service? That's not going to work. Yeah. Now you're like, well, it did work. So, but it's hard. Yeah. People want to knock you down.
Well, when I went to college, and you could relate, look, on Thursday night, I'd go to the library, right? And I remember my fraternity brothers like, what are you doing? It's Thursday night, Thursday. We got memories are forever. You know, grades are temporary. My cousin got a job with a 2.0 and I was doing the right thing. And when you do the right thing, you make other people feel bad that aren't doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to come over to the dark side.
So when you start something new and your buddy's sitting there thinking I should be doing something new or starting a business or getting outside of my comfort zone, and, you know, misery hates to lose company, you know? So
yeah, people want to go and have the fun and be part of the, I have a guy, a client of mine who's got, I don't know, now he owns 15, 20 properties. He's a cop.
Wow.
And he's good with his hands. When he was younger, he got a connection with some bank and they were getting these properties, and they were small properties, 50, 100, 150. So, you know, on the weekends, these guys will all be partying and he wouldn't be there. And then they'd be like, well, hey, Mike, where have you been? He says, well, I'm working on, hey, why are you driving that BMW? I said, because when you guys are out drinking, I'm working on my properties. And now he's a cop just by choice because he doesn't need the money.
Yeah.
You know, his income. Yeah. And he built it up. He paid his dues.
Pay the
price. He stuck with it. Yeah. Exactly. But these guys are all scratching their heads like, huh?
Yeah. And I think, you know, hey, look, the people that listen, the people that are, you know, tuning in, the people that are going to follow you and the entrepreneurs you naturally bring into this, you know, they're going to see the same thing. You know, there's only a couple qualities you need. And, you know, if you have them, great. And education is usually the last one. You know, I tell people it's 99% confidence and courage and 1% education.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree. I mean, I'm not saying with my kids in college and everything, don't go to college. Like, right. You should definitely get a degree, get an education. Yeah. But where you go, I think there's a book actually called Where You Go Is Not What You Will Become, something like that.
Yeah.
And my high school promotes it, my kids' high school. And because the kids get so caught up on where they're going to go to school and what, I mean, just get an education. And learn life at the same time and then go out there. And there's no correlation between where you went to school and how much money you make.
It's 100% true. I think to your point is, once you get out there, realize even I read an article, the guys that started Grubhub were asking restaurant owners where their challenges were and thinking software, last thing was delivery. Can it be this simple, and all of a sudden that, went in one door and came out another for them in their business model and well, what
now coronavirus, it's like there wasn't a lot of, especially in the suburbs, there's no delivery out by me. There wasn't until they got DoorDash and Grubhub and Uber Eats. I think Uber Eats did something in the first half of the year because of Corona, like 4.6 billion in gross sales, crazy number because you can't leave your house. So
for sure.
Everything's getting,
Everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was right behind you with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So parting words, like advice, if somebody wants to get into, let's not be too broad, right? If somebody wants to get into network marketing, for example, how should they start? How do they start learning about it? They obviously can contact you, right? They can.
Without a doubt. I feel that there's only a couple things I would look for. I mentioned it earlier. I would be with a legacy company just because of, yes, is there a better opportunity for the first guy in the door? Absolutely. But there's also the chances of making it are very, very slim. And so I personally didn't have 5 years to burn. You know what I mean? So if you're in that position where, look, I can't waste the next five or waste the next 10.
You want to go with an accepted company.
You got to go with one that has a track record of success.
And it doesn't have to be Amway. There's a lot of companies out
there's a lot. I mean, the list is long of people that have been around longer than 15 years. And so that's easy to find. Okay. And the second thing is you got to get a mentor. My opinion is it's always easier when somebody else is giving you the next steps, because the better you do, the better they do.
Right.
So they're never going to give you bad information. They're always going to give you the right information.
And when you struggle, you're not alone either, right?
They come where you are and say, that's normal and don't worry.
Don't worry about it. It's a new opportunity. I went through that. Absolutely. I screwed up more than that.
100%. And so I think, and then the third thing is give yourself time. You got to have that. Look, it's not going to be the first 12 months, and you got to give yourself a little bit of that time in order for it to grow. And so I would tell anybody, before you bought any business or did anything, network marketing is going to give you the personal skills. It's going to give you the leadership skills. It's going to give you the, hey, everybody that your friend isn't your friend. You know what I mean? Everybody has said, I'll do anything for you. You know what I mean? Like, that's a little bit of a reality check too for people to say, look, brother,
it is. Hey, I got a store. We sell sneakers. And your best friend goes, I don't need any sneakers. Well, you got 2 feet. What are you talking about? Nah, they don't want to buy. And then he's not your friend anymore.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm not saying do what I do. Just encourage me. You know what I mean? Mitch, I know it ain't for me, but I hope you make $1 billion. We're friends and I want to see my friends win.
You people or whatever.
So I would say that would be where I would start in business, because that's going to give you the network. It's going to give you the opportunity to get to meet yourself. And, a lot of times people don't like the person they meet the first time they meet them, because you have the perception of who you are and then you have who you are, And so, look, I'm good at everything I do. And then you find out you really aren't, or, hey, I'm super committed. You find out you're really not that committed.
Right.
So find that stuff out now and get that opportunity to grow. And then when you do get into something that's going to take some real capital and give up the 401k and give up the equity in the home and do the things that entrepreneurs really do when they have to get into something that's capital intensive, they go all in, and they go all in with everything they've got.
But do that second. Keep your job.
100%.
Learn about network marketing. Yes. Get started. Yes. Slowly move your way and limit your risk.
That's 100%. And then use the income to go do whatever you want to go do. And if your passion is to become a chef and you want to own a restaurant, great. Do it with money you've already created, so that you're not going in with the gun to your head under a very difficult time for a lot of people in business when they start.
Yeah, well, if your restaurant got shut down during COVID and you were in network marketing, you'd still have that income.
Exactly. And I think now, look, multiple streams, I think everybody is now waking up to. And I think also get multiple skill sets, because, again, you can then, learn a little bit about a couple of things as opposed to being just a master one.
Yeah, because you can't bank on whatever you're doing for the rest of your life. You're going to hit a roadblock of some sort.
For sure.
All right.
Outside of your control.
Definitely. Well, Patrick, I appreciate spending almost an hour with me on the
video. It flew by. Yeah.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.